I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
We're going to share some knowledge today, right here.
In fact, the first bit of knowledge I would like to share
is
a correction.
Oh?
So in...
It was about my fact. Was my fact wrong?
So in the Bob fact segment last week, we followed Bob's suggestion to the Aqua Intelligence Institute or something like that. And just by looking that up, we found a page from the Jejun Institute. Which purported to be an organization that contained that effort and a lot of other interesting alternative ideas.
Yes. You're going to, like, debunk it and tell me it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
God damn it! It was so good!
The Jejun Institute, also known as the Games of Nonchalance, was an alternate reality game, public art installation, and immersive experience that ran in San Francisco, California, from 2008 to the 10th of April, 2011.
This is what I get for not using Wikipedia. They say you shouldn't use Wikipedia for your research, but apparently you should.
Launched by the arts group Nonchalance.
This makes me so sad because I thought we found, like, the weirdest ass corner of the internet.
No, the thing is, it lined up so much with that episode and with what Bob said. So, there are several possibilities that lay themselves out.
They were super SeaQuest fans.
That's one of them. They were super SeaQuest fans. And this is all intentional references to hide and seek.
I feel like I need to go dig in, like, fan fiction, like, archives to, like, find people who wrote things about all these other weird-ass things on that website.
It could be the world's just... least likely, but most incredible coincidence.
I'm going with they live and breathe SeaQuest.
It could be that there is an Aqua Intelligence Institute, or whatever it was, that is what Bob was referring to, that was involved in some of these alternative ideas, and Nonchalance, when they were creating their ARG, just sucked that up and put it into their fake Jejun Institute.
This just, like, wrecks my point of view, though.
It could be a lot of things, and some of them are fun and exciting.
Yeah.
And even the ones that aren't are still so strange how they lined up so well regardless.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it is so spot on. I'm just going to hold, again, to the super fans. And they were like, this is the most elaborate tribute we are going to give to SeaQuest. This will live on past us, and, like, they were right, it's 2025, I'm talking about it. Man, I hope whoever was involved finds our podcast one day.
We are about as far from that ARG, like, concluding than it was from that episode airing when it began.
Yeah.
It's roughly equivalent amounts of time.
When did you say it shut down?
It concluded in 2011. April.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have to, like, figure out if that is a significant date in, like, SeaQuest lore.
Gotta, like, check out the lore. Check out, like, the timeline in that book we took quotes from last week.
Did they, like, shut it down specifically on a very important
on
day?
A
like,
SeaQuest day?
This is Ford's birthday. I mean, it would have been when he was born, but you know.
But you know.
You know,
April 10th or whatever it was, I said it a minute ago.
Yeah.
Could be. I don't know. I know Lucas was born on Christmas.
No, it's around Christmas.
It's like the 23rd.
Yeah.
Lucas was born on December 23rd.
Yeah, it's like it's not.
It's basically Christmas. He's basically computer Jesus.
True. Onto something there. Mm-hmm, what if that was his internet's...
Jesus?
Yeah. What if instead of being Frankenstein, he was just Jesus?
What's going on, Wolfman? I'm sad, Jesus.
That would be amazing. It's just the question of what his avatar looks like. Like, which version of Jesus are we going
which
with?
Which version of Jesus? I think people are able to, like, customize not only their avatars, but how they see others.
Yeah.
So all of his internet friends have their own personal Jesus.
Okay. So
reach out and touch dolphin.
So each person can customize what their friends look like, which means that the Red Menace totally just like abs. Abs and a loincloth Jesus.
Oh, I thought you meant when Lucas sees the Red Menace, she has abs.
No, and a loincloth. No, that's how she designs Lucas for her. When he shows up, it's abs. Nick also borrows that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone believes Lucas is ripped.
It's the dream. For them. They're like, yes, under those baggy clothes, he is ripped.
Baseball is not the best sport for show muscles. Baseball players very fit, clearly. But, like, if you want muscle definition, you're a boxing fan, basketball, those guys get pretty defined arms.
Gymnastics?
Definitely, definitely.
Swimmers?
Yeah, yeah.
If they're backs. If you're a back
If you're
person,
into backs, if you're that's into backs, for sure.
That's
yes.
what you want. Those traps, man.
Trap me in those. Anyhow, today we're talking about episode 19 of the first season of Sequest DSV. It is called The Last Lap at Luxury. This episode, if you go back to our production code conversation, was fourth. Yet again, the 19th aired. This one was cooking for a long time. And there are three main points, I think, where you can tell.
Absolutely. Someone's not in a job they've had for a few episodes when this one starts. But they get it at the end of this episode.
It's a flashback. It's we're going to go in and fill in the blanks there. This episode is written by Zora Quaiton, and this is the only credit for Zora Quaiton on anything. If you look up Zora Quaiton, you will only see this episode of Sequest DSV.
This is their career.
This makes me wonder, is Zora Quaiton not a person, but perhaps a pseudonym?
Maybe, maybe.
I have questions. Directed, of course, by all-star Sequest director Brian Spicer, last seen on Whale Song and Bad Water. This one you've been looking forward to.
I enjoy this one.
This is
like
one
this
of your
one.
Season one faves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. We got a lot of Lucas. We got a lot of Bridger.
We got a lot of Lucas and a lot of Bridger.
Yeah.
To the point that we have very little of anyone else in the regular cast. I don't think Krieg talks in this one.
But you see him a few times.
Hashtag Krieg gang is drowning.
You do not see Ortiz, like, at all.
No.
But, like, everyone else appears for, like, a second. Or
like
longer.
Like, Ford gets one line, I think.
No, Ford has more. Ford keeps popping up
on
videos.
That's right. Yeah.
O'Neill gets, like, one scene.
Yeah.
But Ford, he pops up a lot.
Very, very much a two-hander from the usual crew, plus a trio of very featured guests.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So this episode starts with Bridger dressing in front of his good buddy, Admiral Noyce, not Secretary Noyce.
Getting in their fancy uniforms together.
They gotta get that dress uniform
with
their
on. Fancy turtlenecks.
And Bridger is so not into it. He's so pissed about
he's
this.
He's so grumpy.
He's just Mr. Grumpy Gus. He's got his grumpy gills and his pout pout face.
He's spreading his grumpy wumpies all over the place.
Yes. And what is happening is that the Secretary General, that is not Noyce, again.
Clearly.
Is using the Sequest to shuttle her to the UEO summit. And Bridger is like, this is such a waste of money. Do you realize how much money this is costing for us to do this? And we're not a parade float. And like, this is such bullshit. Why do I gotta put on this uniform?
He considers it a flag waving contest. Noyce is nagging him that, hey, they might make you sing the national anthem. Bridger is upset that the Secretary General isn't going in her usual billion-dollar airship.
Yes.
I would like to know more about this billion-dollar airship that has a movie theater aboard.
We apparently have airships in
this.
That
sounds fun. We haven't heard about airships since Malcolm the Dolphin Weirdo's grandma came to visit.
Yes. Yeah. This is true. Noyce is also just reminding Bridger, like, hey, she's our boss, essentially. Like, you kind of got to do this. And he's like, you such fucking bullshit. I hate this. Grumpy grump grump.
The crack about the movie theater leads into a riff on Lawrence of Arabia. And Noyce says, yeah, she is Lawrence. And I'm like, I just sat here. I just watched this character's entire appearance on the program Sequest DSV. In what way is she Lawrence of Arabia? In what way is she T.E. Lawrence?
She's not. She's not.
But that gets capped off with one of Bridger's very grumpy one-liners. Yes. You know why I hate deserts? They used to be oceans.
Grumpy wumpies.
Grumpy wumpies.
So Noyce is like, oh, it's not going to be that bad. You know, like, did I ever tell you how I went to Woodstock with the Secretary General way back when?
That's how they met. And Bridger blows him off by saying, who cares? I was 8 during Woodstock.
Yes. I didn't realize there was such an age gap between them.
Roughly 10 years, I guess.
I guess. Did not think so.
But this is where we learn that Bridger is a U2 guy.
Bridger, no!
Which tells me that he got Lucas to make sure that one album was on everyone's iPod, whether
Lucas!
You wanted it or not.
Lucas, no! I hate U2. I do. I do not want to hear any of their songs ever.
This episode was written when they had recently made good ones.
I still don't want to hear them. The only time that I accept Bono is in Across the Universe.
Sure, sure.
He can be in that. I don't want his existence outside of that.
Sequestered from the rest of the world.
Yes. That's it.
Just put him in a hippie van, then lock the door and throw away the key.
It's like if you could, like, contain him in a movie, but in real life, so, like, he can't leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Be great.
Because movies all work like the last action hero. You can trap someone in the movie, and then they will not affect your life.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. This is what I want.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bridger, why? Why? There are so many better options out there for you.
Sure, sure.
That ain't one of them.
So anyway, the scene moves on to our destination, the Mondial Resort, which is this huge glass building under a glass dome under the sea.
Mm-hmm. And they have, like, fancy-ass electric hover cars.
Yeah, yeah! They got elect cars. Gundam is happening.
They look very Gundam-y, honestly. Like, those would be in a Gundam.
I've been trying to tell my dear, darling wife, my partner in all things.
Who's that?
Joy of my days. You. I don't have another wife, dear, I promise. Where would I find the time, frankly?
I don't know.
But I've been trying to tell her, dear listener, that G. Savior, the 1999 Canadian-produced TV film, is a Sequest episode in all but name. It has the Sequest flavor all over it. It is a fusion.
It's salty.
It is a fusion of seasons 1 and 3 put together, I would say.
Very salty. Smells like fish. I don't argue with you on it. Mm-hmm. I just haven't seen it.
It even starts. The first sequence is an underwater rescue.
Oh, I was going to say, is it a trench?
They might be in a trench. There is an undersea mining and someone gets rescued.
This is like one of the few episodes that has nothing to do with a trench.
True.
No trench.
Not even a trough.
Nope.
So in the Mondial Resort, there is there's a construction zone.
Yes.
There's a great chamber of scaffolding and hard-hatted men.
Yes. And they get the man in the suit down there
gets
a call from a man in a suit up top.
A more expensive suit.
Yes, it is red. I will say the man in the suit, red suit, in his office.
Not Santa Claus.
Not Santa. Has some cool ass triangle lights in the background. Did you notice those?
I did not notice. Cool.
They were like
cool ass triangle.
They were
lights.
Like these real, like I guess they were more like triangle cone like.
Sure.
Okay, they were these cone like lights, and they had like only a portion of it was light, so it like kind of like shot out of it. Uh-huh. They were cool. They were neat.
They sound so cool.
They were so cool.
I'm going to have to watch this again just for the super cool triangle cone lights that are partly not lights.
IKEA would sell those.
Sure.
But they'd have to, they'd make them just like white.
Just so we don't call this guy the red suit man who's not Santa Claus, let me reveal that the character is known as Alan Lamb, and he is played by the great Carl Lumbly.
It's Lamb? I thought it was Ham.
It's Lamb with an L.
Oh, I swore the captions at once said Ham.
The captions are often wrong.
Okay.
You might recognize the face of Carl Lumbly as Agent Dixon in Alias.
Oh, I watched that way back. I don't know if I ever finished it.
Much like Roscoe Lee Brown, you've heard his voice in many, many things as well. Most notably, perhaps Martian Manhunter in the Justice League cartoon and Justice League Unlimited and Static Shock and all of the various crossovers and spinoffs. Speaking of superheroes, he played TV's first live-action black superhero in a program called Mantis. That aired in the fall of 1994. With Sequest, we're still in February of 1994. Mm. And he currently plays the secret first Captain America, the covered up medical test subject for the Super Soldier Serum in the MCU.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I'm just trying to think, though, like, when did I stop watching Alias and how much kept going afterwards? I have no idea.
Sure.
I love Victor Garber.
Yes. That's when I learned to love Victor Garber.
Do I love him enough that I want to go, like, rewatch it? I don't know.
Once I learned the other reasons to love Victor Garber, I kept... I spent the rest of the run of Alias, or at least the bits I watched, wondering, why aren't you singing? Why aren't you singing? You should be singing.
I ask this all the time.
And then he was in Legends of Tomorrow. And again, why aren't you singing? They should be making you sing every other episode.
Yes. At least, like, sing while you're, like, cooking or something.
Yeah,
you know?
It doesn't have to be a big to-do. I just want to hear you singing.
If you got him, like, come on.
It's Victor Garber.
He's so good in that Cinderella. I want to watch that again. So anyways,
Big Boss Lamb is calling down to the construction chamber.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, how are things? Is it ready? Like, it should be ready. And the guy's like, it's not quite ready yet.
Speaking very mysteriously. And the boss is like, you know what? I think it's ready. I'm going to hit the big test button.
And the other guy's like, shouldn't we, like, evacuate the workers first? And he's like, no! And so then there's, like, a really big, like, earthquake that happens, and everyone's holding on for dear life, and one guy falls off the scaffolding down a pit.
That's why you maintain 3 points of contact at all times. OSHA matters. I guess it's ocean.
And after it's all done, you can hear people in the background being like, everyone okay here? And I'm just like, no!
No!
That one guy is very much not okay! He's so dead! He so broke his neck.
He fell into the abyss.
And, like, none of the background workers or even that dude in the suit that was like, maybe we shouldn't do it. No one seems concerned about the guy they just watched screaming and falling into the pit. They're all like, oh, okay, that was weird. Back to work. Guess we go.
Life is cheap here in our super awesome luxury hotel.
And here's the thing is whatever the fuck just happened apparently didn't work.
This is just the working conditions in Dubai. This is how the World Cup happened.
This is accurate, actually.
Yeah. Other suit man, not red suit man, has everyone's passports and papers, like, in a safe in his office.
I mean, he doesn't even need to do that because they literally cannot leave. They will drown. He just has to block the door to the launch. It, yeah, they can have their passports. Where are they going to use it? If you don't let them out, like,
So that is our pre-credits cliffhanger into our wonderful song.
And then we get the weirdest fucking decision ever in an episode that I still don't know what the point was.
So it begins with the Earth and Moon as seen from space. And then this crossfades into a PowerPoint presentation about war. And now, ocean war.
It's like you're seeing this map flash with like new boundaries forming.
Constantly shifting, explosions marking points of conflict all around through time.
And this very ominous voice is talking about how the oceans are the last to be claimed. And like, you know, the UEO is about to be tested to the highest level. And then we just like go into the rest of the episode and I was like, what the fuck was that? This was a commercial for the UEO, but within the episode?
Can you imagine how different this would play if this was the fourth episode? If this is when they're like, hey, we've had a couple adventures, but now let me tell you what the whole world situation is and what the UEO is about and what it's for. How many times have we asked, what is the UEO exactly? What is the government situation?
But it's all... Okay, so yes, but... It's really fucking weird, because even if it was the fourth episode, they don't do that on the first three. Okay? Like, if you want to do this, you do it as the... Okay, because this is where we're still having the, like, the on this episode of Sequest, and then they give us the recap before it happens. Okay, so if you took this and made it that, right at the beginning, still weird, because you haven't done it in anything else, but less weird. Because it's trying to be that.
And the
but
information.
But it's after the credits.
Yes, yes.
Why is it after the credits?
And also the information is non-specific to the point that it's basically covered by Euro billionaire speech back in To Be or Not To Be in front of his ponytail thug son.
Yeah. Well, and I also just think about like, okay, if this was early on in the season... Yes, this episode is about the UEO, and the Sequest is the UEO. But the show, typically, well, the UEO is, you know, ingrained in it. The focus is not, like, just that.
The Sequest does not care about the government. The Sequest cares about rescues and scientific discoveries. Yes. Yeah.
So it's also just, it's bizarre. I don't, what a weird choice.
Like, if you know this expository thing is in an episode that you're going to broadcast 19th, maybe you cut it. Maybe you just cut it.
You know what they could have done was they could have given us that 15 extra seconds of that deleted scene that we get later in the episode that we're like, why couldn't we have those 15 seconds? It's because we had to have this. Because
we had the World State PowerPoint presentation. It's too little, way too late.
Did they just have, like, special effects budgets they needed to use up before, like, the end of the, you know, fiscal year?
We love to watch black lines wiggle on a globe.
Wiggle, wiggle, flash, wiggle, wiggle.
Apparently, there's a lot of political reorientations in the continent of Africa. Those borders in particular are dancing the Charleston.
Though I have questions about some of these borders, too, that were in the water. Because there were some that, like, in, like, major giant parts of the ocean that were just, like, little tiny squares. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the fuck is that of? That's... Is there an island there? There better be an island there. Otherwise, that is a weird fucking border to have.
Maybe someone seasteaded. They declared an independent nation out in what was previously international waters and is now theirs because they put an arcology there.
So anyways, so a launch is coming to the Sequest.
Yes.
And it is Dre, Secretary General Dre. And we got everyone there in dress. We got Krieg. Mm-hmm. We got Hitchcock, Crocker, Ford, Noyce, Bridger.
Crocker blows his bosun's whistle ceremonially.
Yes.
He loves that whistle.
And they're all very serious about this. And she comes on out and looks at them all and is like, No one gonna give me a cup of coffee? Like, what's going on?
She's a pal. She's joking. She knows all this ceremony's ridiculous. It's fine. She's the cool Secretary General.
Yeah.
Secretary General Andrea Dre is played by Bonnie Bartlett.
Wait, her name is Andrea Dre.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
You might recognize her for playing a Grace Edwards in 26 episodes of Little House on the Prairie.
Huh! Didn't know that! Never knew that! Definitely watch that!
She's also very well known for playing Ellen Craig in St. Elsewhere. In fact, she won 2 Emmys for that role. The first one on the same night her husband, her real-life husband, won, playing a different character on St. Elsewhere.
Oh! Okay! Good job, guys!
However, around the time of her Sequest appearance, she was appearing as Tim Allen's mom in a handful of episodes of Home Improvement over the years.
Okay!
Her character's page on the Home Improvement Wiki, because of course there's a Home Improvement Wiki.
There's a wiki for everything.
Has a wonderful bit of trivia where in one appearance she has a line that, oh yeah, she raised 5 Taylor boys. But also, over the course of the show, 8 Taylor boys are named.
Didn't raise the other ones.
3 of her sons are feral creatures.
Just let them roam. I mean, or she made the other ones raise them.
Yeah.
Which means they'd be pretty feral.
She farmed them out.
Yeah, you go. You're fine. Just eat that. You're fine. Just go.
So yeah, she is putting everyone at ease. She's clapping backs and
hugging Billy.
Hug Billy. Billy Noyce. Big hugs.
And apparently she knows Ford for a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, graduating first in your class. Yeah, look at you.
Mm-hmm. This is what it gets you. It gets you a really nice posting on a superboat.
And then she goes up to Bridger and she's like, Nathan, looking gorgeous. And like, looks him up and down like a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I guess she's supposed to be, because what she says next is like, oh, they have you wearing shoes now. So I guess she's supposed to be looking at his feet, but mm-hmm. like. What the fuck are you looking at?
I do enjoy a good joke about him being the island hobo from To Be or Not to Be. That's nice. She asks him, you know, what she can do to make it up to him for putting the Sequest on chauffeur duty. And he says, $2 million.
Yeah.
And she says, that's fine. I'll take it out of the space budget. Anyhow, do you think that's why Kent McCord crashed in the ocean?
Yes.
Do you think that those $2 million came out of the re-entry for the Mars capsule?
I'm going to go with yes, because that episode's supposed to happen after this.
I don't care that it doesn't make sense and that capsule was launched years and years ago. Don't bother me.
Well, it could have affected, you know, computer equipment telling them to come back.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, you know. She's like, hey, you know, give me a tour, lead me around, show me where you've been putting all that money that we give you.
She's been hearing about all these jumpsuits that come free when you take the tour.
She can't wait to get a jumpsuit. So we go to the moon pool and we see Lucas.
I love that it hard cuts from, quote, show me what you've been spending all that UEO research money on, a hard cut to Lucas in a snorkel.
In a snorkel mask with Darwin.
Just playing like, with sponges.
Wrestling, yeah, sponges out of his mouth. And so then up in
up in C-Deck.
C-Deck, there we go. That's what I wanted. Up in C-Deck. Wes Phelan is trying to call Darwin and has definitely been trying for a while. And Dre and Noyce and Bridger are there. And Bridger is getting a little like, is that working? Doctor, is it working?
Maybe you can show me other science.
And they're like, oh, wait till you see this. It's great. It's worth the wait. And then Lucas pops up, throws the sponge at the clock, and is like, yeah, dolphins win! Woo! And like turns around and sees the biggest glare from Bridger and a disapproving look from Wes Phelan, and he's like, what did I miss?
He never makes a very dignified impression on authority figures.
No.
No.
He has really bad timing. what Jameson, what do we need? And Bridger's like, Darwin, and like, go get him. And so he's like, got it, and then swims off to get him. And Darwin, as he's doing that, like, to go get Darwin, Trey is like, who's that? Stowaway. No, that's all he, Stowaway. We'll figure him out later.
Never
it's
seen
fine.
Him before in never my life. Fine. So Darwin makes an appearance. He says words.
Yes. Darwin, Lucas, play football.
Yeah, yeah. And this is an amazing, amazing thing. Secretary General Dre is overcome with what an incredible achievement this is. And Bridger describes it as, quote, in that gray area between God and science.
Mm-hmm.
How? What does that mean? In what way is Darwin between God and science?
Well...
Are you the regulator?
Lucas is Jesus. It's all connected. Lucas is Jesus and a scientist.
I think Bridger's been spending too much time with Malcolm. He's worried about Westphalen hanging out with Malcolm. I'm worried about him.
Dre is like, wow, this is amazing. This is the coolest thing. Like, I wish I could show him off to, like, the summit. Mm-hmm, and Bridger's like, we can't do that. Like, we cannot trust Darwin to, like, talk. She's like, oh, okay, Westphalen, like, come with me. Like, talk about your research and your you know, what you've created here. And she's like, oh, it ain't me.
I did not make the dolphin phone.
And so Dre's like, well, who is it? And the look on Bridger's face of, like, fuck.
And so they go right to the source. In the time it takes them to have half a conversation, Lucas has ditched his wetsuit. He's perfectly dry in his room. Uh-huh.
And he's jamming out.
He's banging out the tunes.
Banging out the tunes. I want to think that they took her on more of a tour. They offered her a jumpsuit, but she decided she didn't really like the cut of it. Mm-hmm. And then
it bunches.
Yeah. And so they continued on their way, finally, to Lucas. So Lucas, though, is like... DJing?
Yeah, he has the full soundboard, like, from the back of a music venue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got all the dials, all the switches on this huge equalizer board.
Does not hear them enter. You know, once Bridger gets his attention, he, you know, unplugs it. And Dre, without introducing herself, immediately, like, starts talking about him, like, oh, you're a musician. Tell me about this. Let me hear your music.
The music he's playing when they enter is basically U2.
Yeah.
He's turning out like his science daddy.
Yeah. So what Lucas has done is he has made a computer algorithm to do a search of the best music of the past 50 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's composing new pieces.
Yes, by picking up a sample, mm-hmm. and then using its computer logic to add a sample that follows, etc., etc. He's describing it like a proponent of generative AI describes yes. that process.
Yes.
That is what Lucas has invented.
Great. It's not great. If you want it for yourself, fine, but...
He's really proud of it. Perhaps he's not burning the rainforest to make this one work.
I'm gonna go with we're past that in their time.
Yeah.
We are not killing the world through AI.
It is a similar process, but it is a different architecture under the hood.
Yeah, it's not the hellscape that it is right now.
It is the plagiarism machine all the same, Lucas.
It is. As long as he doesn't sell this right, shit or distribute.
Right, which is why it's a wonderful toy for him to learn and grow.
So let's hope it stays that way. she wants, though, to, like, oh, play me a piece. Like, let me hear it. And he's like, oh, no, no, no. And she's like, I was at Woodstock. And he's like, what?
He says, what? That was the turning point of the Vietnam War. Lucas, what? Is Sequest set in a parallel world where the Viet Cong airdropped into Woodstock? Lucas, what does that mean?
It was a really long time
ago
for him.
It was 1969. There wasn't even, like, it was 1969, Lucas.
He doesn't pay attention to his history. He's a scientist. I don't know.
Nixon had barely started his whole, you know, Nixoning.
Lucas has some moments, but he plugs his stuff in, turns it up, the speaker is blasting, playing a tune. He's very proud of it. They look on a little like, yeah, that's really loud. And then his speaker blows.
And they react to it like it's a problem with, like, the computer algorithm, and not that he just had it turned up way too high.
Way too
high. Is a hardware issue.
Yes. Turn it down. It doesn't need to be that loud. So then she finally introduces herself, and he's like, wait, what?
She introduces herself by name and not by title. He then recognizes that, oh, yeah, that's the Secretary General. Because I guess, yeah, Internex news reports don't include pictures.
I mean...
How do you not know the face of the Secretary General of the UEO, the organization of which you are a member? She essentially is your boss. She pays you. She pays you.
She's kind of a boring looking old woman. Like, I don't expect him to know that.
If you know her name, you would know her face. She is queen of the world government.
Yeah, he put it together in that moment. It was that whole, I wasn't expecting to see you here. So I don't know. I thought maybe you were Bridger's sister.
Who bears a striking resemblance to Secretary General Drake. Okay,
yes.
All right. This is the argument that, like, if Barack Obama worked at McDonald's, you would just think, that guy looks a lot like Obama.
Yes.
Because you would never believe it.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. That's the thing, is you might think, like, wow, this person looks like so-and-so, but you're not going to, like, make the actual connection, because why would they be here?
This is the thing that people who don't get Superman... get so hung up on. If Superman were real, there's 7 billion people in the world. A handful of them are going to look kind of like Superman.
Yeah,
Clark Kent can get away with it.
And, like, it's like that thing with, like, those, like, three guys from, like, American Horror Story that look
those
all fucking...
eight guys from
okay,
American Horror
now
Story.
Now it's up to, like, eight, but it started as, like, three. And now it's just, like,
never tell them
a running joke of... But, yeah, it's like that. No one knows which one's which. And you just keep throwing more in, and you're like, I don't know if there's 3 or 8 or 12. Like, they're the same dude.
Which one are you? Are you the drunk or the other drunk? I don't know.
I don't know.
How did your family die? How sad are you right now? Which one are you?
But, right? Like, it's like that. I can't tell them apart. And if you threw one of them, like, out of the stream, like, oh, man, it's another dude that looks like those five dudes. I don't know. I think they're just fucking with people at this point, though. Like, casting directors are being like, hey, see these dudes? Go find dudes that look like these dudes.
Are any of their stunt doubles interested in becoming a proper actor with lines and such?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, hey, Lucas, I want you to come to the UEO summit with me to talk about, you know, your work with Darwin. And he's like, oh.
Lucas just got a big report due tomorrow.
Like, no thanks. And she's very smart because she earlier when they first walked in and, like, Lucas is jamming out, Bridger kind of scolded him for, like, hey, weren't you supposed to be working on, like, a mainstream or main sweep of the mainframe? And he was like, it's fine. It's working. I'm not ignoring my work. And so she's like, oh, well, you know, if you, like, don't want to come with me, I guess you can, like, work on that instead. Sounds pretty interesting. And he's like, okay, fine, I'll come.
Sure. I'll go meet 8 world leaders, 9 including yourself, ma'am.
So they are on a launch to the resort. They get there. They're in the cool electric shuttles.
And then drive up into, like, the press zone. They have to go through the press gauntlet.
Yes. Mr. Lamb is watching them enter and radios suit dude in the hole. His name is Richard.
Yes.
He's like, hey, Richard, we ready? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay.
So the delegates have all arrived in their not terribly impressive boardroom.
No, it's so bad.
It's a little cramped, frankly.
Yeah, it's not very nice.
And so there are heads of eight of the world's confederations, including one familiar face.
Yes.
President Lee from A Better Than Martians is making mm-hmm. his first/second appearance.
Yes, he's you know, part of the UEO. There uh-huh. you go. Yeah, nice to see him back.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are finishing up watching a video of Darwin speaking. I'm going to go with that was not live, that was recorded to make sure they knew what Darwin was going to say.
Darwin's video message is, quote, "Universe, home for world. We are universe." And somewhere, Leslie is screaming. Oh, the regulator. I love you, man.
Bananas?
Bananas?
Bananas? I so wish he would have come back for one episode again. Mm-hmm. Like, one more time.
Yes. The,
season three.
Season three, Future. The regulator. Oh, man. Vern Jr.
Would have been so good.
Vern Jr.
Vern Jr. Could use his gills.
Well, a lot of developments
are made quickly.
In artificial gill technology. More on that next week. So yes, the leadership of humanity has received a message from the first other species on Earth to verbally speak in an intelligible language. Incredible. Amazing strides are being taken.
What about birds?
I don't think that's the same thing.
But it's like you can understand it.
A bird has never told me anything I didn't already know.
How often do you talk to birds? I was gonna say. Gorillas.
Gorillas.
Sign. They use sign language.
Coco Birkenbag, jealousy mm-hmm. professor. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just saying. There's no.
Bananas?
Bananas? Yeah, they're all very, you know, moved by this.
Wait until they hook up the dream machine and see themselves turn into skeletons.
And so Dre is like, now let's bring up the person who made this possible. Lucas, come on up. And they pan over to him right as he's sitting in the corner with Bridger, blowing a bubble, looking bored as hell.
His gum bubble pops over his face as he's immediately on the spot.
It's like, fuck. And Bridger is just like, I guess you gotta go say something, like, glad it's you and not me, like.
So he walks up, and he's umming, he's stammering,
smacking his gum around.
Until Bridger catches his eye, and like, points inside his mouth, like he has a problem with his uvula. And then Lucas gets the idea and takes out this massive glob. He's like chewing three pieces of gum at once. It's so much gum.
That's why he's smacking so much. And it's like, it's not like a regular piece of gum. Like, these are like...
It's cherry red.
These are like three of the giant, like, double bubble, yeah. like... And so he takes it out and he sticks it under the podium. Because, you know, he's a crazy teen. That's what teens do.
And continues to try to give an impromptu speech about what this is and what it could mean and what it could be. Though, as an ichthyologist might say, he's floundering.
Yes. And he starts accidentally hitting, like, translation buttons yeah. on the podium. So, like... What he's saying just starts getting translated in a whole bunch of languages, and some of which he's like, I don't even know what one that is. Like, help.
And then
help.
He starts like poking at it like it's a toy. Like, he's like remixing his live speech.
And so as he is dying up there, Dre's like, hey, Bridger, Noyce, come with me. And like, they just leave him.
They abandoned him in his time of need.
Like, Bridger, like, looks at him and, like, just shrugs, like, And the doors close as Lucas is still like, can someone help me with this? Like, I don't know what to do.
In front of eight presidents and leaders of multinational confederations in this new world order.
And so outside, Dre is like... we have some unofficial regions that have gone on alert. Things are getting spicy out there.
Some of the non-UEO navies are going on maneuvers. Interesting. Mysterious.
And while they're talking, Mr. Lamb calls down to Richard and is like, hey, it's time. And then an earthquake starts to fucking happen.
There's this big earthquake. There's apparently an explosion. People talk about an explosion in future scenes.
We don't see it.
We just see an earthquake.
Yes.
Which could be the sign of a really big explosion.
And,
sure.
You know, they're feeling it just outside the room. They're feeling it inside. Lucas does, like, pull up a blind and's like, hey, that is wall flying upward.
You see, the chamber around you has no windows and no doors.
Except there is a window.
There's a window.
There's also doors. I will say one thing I love about this resort set is all the doors.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they come, like when Dre brings Bridger and Noyce out of this conference room, it has really cool doors that like are angled and like crisscross each other, and then a whole nother panel happens. It's like three panels.
They're good doors. They're good doors.
It's very cool.
This whole facility is the boardroom.
Mm-hmm.
Some hallways outside the boardroom where we're going to have a number of conversations.
The press sidewalk.
Yes, the outdoor underdome courtyard where the press hangs out and the construction chamber, the scaffolding zone.
And like Lamb's office.
Yeah, I guess. I guess that's a place that exists, yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Honestly, this is not the best set ever. It's very minimal. We see a lot of the same thing again and again.
It's very gray. It's very clean and
unadored. It is not a resort I would want to go to.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't speak of comfort.
It's like going to the contemporary resort at Disney because you hear it's this really cool thing and they're like, hey, it's got a monorail running through it and a cool mural. And you're like, yeah, those things are cool. And everything else about this place, aside from the restaurant, is awful. It's just concrete.
And you got to be picky about which restaurant you mean. It's the upstairs restaurant.
Upstairs one. Rooftop restaurant. Great.
Yeah.
Perfection. But I don't want to stay there. It's fucking boring. It's ugly as shit.
At least it has like furniture you can sit in around some spots. I don't see that here outside of Lamb's office.
I just like
even the viewing bench where Noyce and Bridger were watching Lucas fail to give a speech looked really uncomfortable.
I'm just like, what type of resort is this? What is this for other than boring ass conferences? Nothing about this says resort. Ooh. It's no, like, Cabo or any. Like, this is boring.
You can't go fishing. If you go to where the fish are, the whole place will flood and everyone dies.
So, once the earth stops shaking, Bridger and them turn around because the doors open and they go into the conference room and no one's there.
David Copperfield hates international diplomacy. Is that the David Copperfield noise?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did I ever tell you about
Mind Freak?
When I came to Chicago on a Girl Scout trip, like as a teen.
Yes, but you should tell the listeners.
Okay. So I came to Chicago. I was on a Girl Scout trip. I was probably like 14, 15. All the tourist stuff in like 3 days. But we went to like a David Copperfield show. It might have even been him. Or someone like him. I don't remember. I feel like it was him. I don't think any of us girls wanted to go, but it was the show that was picked for us. But we were like, fine, like we want to go to a show, but like sure. This one, okay. The adult that was with us could not stay in her seat. She was so overcome with shock and awe over every single thing of magic that happened on the stage. That woman shot up out of her seat going, what? Oh my god! The whole damn show.
Is this when he was dating Cindy Crawford? How long were they together? Like, David Copperfield had his pick of all women in America for a period of time.
Let's see. David Copperfield, Chicago show, 2004? Was he here? He was! He was! It was totally David Copperfield.
At the Oriental, is that where
he was? Yeah, okay. Yeah. In March 2004, that would have been it. Yeah, she couldn't handle it. It was like, and we're just like, I stopped watching the show and I just watched her. I was just now, like,
that's where the magic happens.
I'm pretty sure her, like, biggest dream in the world was, like, to be the person that got called up to have the magic happen to them. I think she would have had a heart attack.
You think if MTV Cribs did a David Copperfield episode, did he also say this is where the magic happens? But he said it in every room of the house.
This is also where the magic happens. Magic happens here, too.
Magic happens in the driveway. Magic happens on Liberty Island. Made that thing disappear. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Be something like his crawl space and be like, actually, magic has not happened there.
No.
No, there's not really enough room. It's kind of dark. I don't like spiders. But over here, magic has magic happened. Magic happens.
So the situation is all the world's leaders have disappeared, and now you must be thinking, ah, this is how Noyce gets his new job, just by default.
Except no, because, Dre's right there. She's not in there.
Just by a freak accident of timing, they forgot about Dre. This is a musical episode.
They thought Lucas was her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same hair.
They look so much alike.
That's why he didn't recognize her. He's like, are you my mother? Mama? Finally, mama.
We never get to meet Lucas's mom ever in the show. And that is something I've always wanted.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to know what his mother's like. Hitchcock comes running in, like, mm-hmm, sometimes, mm-hmm. She's like, what's going on? And they're like, we don't know, like, get us through to the Sequest. Like, no one knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. This is Hitchcock's big scene.
Yeah, she's in the background of a few things, but, like, doesn't say much.
Right, this is not an ensemble episode. No.
Mr. Lamb is speaking to the media.
Yes, and the press is very concerned about this reported explosion, the seismic event, and they don't know the real problem. They're asking about, like, what could have caused the ground to go movie. They don't know anything about what's happened in the boardroom.
No. And so he's out there, you know, defending, oh, well, it's a new resort. You gotta test things out. You know, this is just, like, a problem with our environmental controls. Yeah, the air conditioner caused an earthquake.
So your rooms might get a little toasty over the next few hours, but it's all fine.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Bridger, who does know the problem, catches up to Lamb and says, hey, give me blueprint. Bridger want blueprint.
And he's like, I can't do that. They're not for public review. And he's like, okay, well, then, you know, we'll investigate you for this. Give me blueprints. And he's like, okay, fine.
Okay, give Bridger blueprint.
But also, leak to the press that the UEO leadership is missing. Mm-hmm, we're going to do that in retaliation. So, Dre comes running in to Bridger and Noyce and is like, hey, the UEO military is on alert because of this. And Bridger's like, isn't that, like, a little fast?
Should we be building up a military response and perhaps provoking these unaligned nations for doing whatever? Like, I don't know. It seems like a tense time.
Shouldn't we just, like, pretend everything's okay until we know what's actually going on?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm not covering this up. Absolutely not. Like, no.
Transparency is the best policy. People deserve to know what's happening to their leadership.
Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, during this, Lamb is videoing down to Lucas and the leaders of the world in their conference room, wherever that is.
In the upstairs conversation, which is not that upstairs, they're still on a dome on the ocean floor. But the conversation ends when Dre is like, we've got 8 Confederation heads missing, and Bridger dramatically turns and says, and a 16-year-old boy.
And so then we go see Lucas listening to Mr. Lamb giving them all the rundown of what's happening here, that they are going to be held until they review these new governing documents and trade agreements and sign off on them.
Yeah. He's basically holding them hostage until they sign a new UEO charter to replace the current one, which will deregulate industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's return to unfettered Wild West capitalism in the seas, or you will all suffocate in my conference hole.
The security people are done checking out the upstairs conference room. Mm-hmm. They're like, there's nothing here. We can't find anything. And Bridger radios over to the Sequest, videos over. And is like, hey, you guys gotta check stuff. You gotta do some searches. You gotta get those whiskers out. Like, Westphalen, you gotta check to see if this could have, like, actually been an earthquake or not. Mm-hmm.
He's giving orders for, like, a 50-mile radius for this search. It is a manhunt.
Mm-hmm. They're like, well, what are we searching for? And he's like, we are searching, or what's going on down there? They're mm-hmm. like, what's going on? And he's like, we seem to be, in the process of manufacturing a crisis, an international crisis. Like, Bridger's yeah. like, this ain't up to, like, there is shit going on here.
Crisis.
I believe, crisis. Crisis. That was the best thing ever. Crisis.
You ever do an in-joke on your podcast that only four people in the world know? Two of them are recording the podcast, and the other two are not listening.
Crisis.
There's a gesture that most of it is a gesture, dear listener. You have to.
They're like, oh, okay, like we'll get on this, like it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ford tells Crocker to go, like, you know, get all this going. And he's like, okay, but like, what are we looking for? And Ford's like, Lucas.
Also, President Lee.
Also, all the other people, and but Lucas.
Seven other very important people.
Everyone else is if we find them. Lucas.
Lucas. He's worth at least five Confederation heads all on his own. He's a very special boy.
Yes.
They don't let anyone just be Internet's Jesus.
So inside the conference room mm-hmm. with Lucas and all of the leaders, Lucas is like, hey, look up there at the ceiling. You see that condensation? That's condensation. Let me explain what condensation is. Because you guys are all really dumb world leaders.
You know how this show is sort of science faction? You remember that from way back when? Sure. We're going to explain condensation. We're going to further explain that that means we're cut off from the HVAC system. And then he walks them over to those windows, draws the blinds again to see that they are open to sheer bedrock.
Yes. And everyone is like, what? Where are we? And he's like, I think we're under the resort.
Mm-mm.
I think we have dropped.
This scene has an extended version as the one deleted scene available on the Blu-ray box set, which you can find at Menards and other fine retailers. And it just starts like 15 seconds earlier.
Yeah.
The extended version starts with a number of the world leaders who, in the actual broadcast episode, are left with zero lines with this cut.
Yes. Yeah.
Each one, like, offering a theory and bickering, and Lucas is trying to talk, but they don't pay attention to him because he is a dolphin computer child and not an expert in the matters at hand.
That they know of,
until President Lee, who may or may not have met several friends of his. I don't know what the full chronology here is. Mm-hmm. Is like, hey, no, let's listen to the boy. And then, yeah, he talks about condensation and wins them over with his magic school bus level scientific expertise.
So Dre, again, comes back to Bridger and Noyce. Her whole role in this entire episode is to leave and come back.
Where is she going?
I don't know. And so yet again, she's like, oh my gosh, the rumors are running. There's going to be a press conference in 2 hours. Noyce, call the president.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He does not.
No, he radios a general.
He radios, yeah. He gets like chairman of the Joint Chiefs instead.
And Bridger, while he's talking, goes to the podium, is kind of wandering around, looking, thinking, and he holds onto the podium and realizes, like, wait.
My fingers aren't sticky.
I didn't just shove my hand in gum.
There's plot critical gum. Ah!
The gum is missing. And Bridger is like, hey, Noise, here's the deal. No one disappeared from here. This isn't the same room. There is no gum.
He figured out the locked room mystery. It got swapped with a different locked room.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the doctor was the mother.
So then Dre comes back again.
And they're kneeling at the podium in Bridger yet again, because we're now on the opposite side of a commercial. We got to catch people up. Says, hey, the lack of gum means this is a different room.
And she's like, I can't tell people this. I can't tell them about gum. And he's like, well, why do you have to tell them anything? Like,
because we live in a fucking democracy, Bridger.
And so she's like, well, fine, I'll try to stall. And then she's like, there's a press conference in less than 2 hours.
You know, that's TV, baby. Sometimes people are like getting a snack out of the kitchen. People got to pee in the middle of your episode. You can't pause it. This is NBC live broadcast.
You run during those commercial breaks. You fly through the house or you hold your pee.
There's no DVR in 1994. We aren't TiVoing nothing.
Put your VHS tape in. VHS tape that you re-record over for every episode. Right? The one that you... Okay, so what I did as a kid...
Yeah?
For all... This is how I watched so much late-night sci-fi stuff.
Sometimes I would... Star Hunter.
Sometimes I would stay up. But sometimes what I would do, because I did have, like, one of those tiny, like, TVs with the built-in, like, VHS player. Yes, like, yes. Small ones. I would...
We watched things on your bed and then made out.
Yes, but this was before then a lot.
Well, yeah.
But yes. So, like, that was back, like, those TVs, for the young people out there, you could put your VHS tape in, set it to whatever channel, and actually turn your TV off, and it would record.
And just record off whatever signal it's tuned into.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so I would, like, record, like, 4 hours of sci-fi every night, watch it later, and then, like, retape over it the next night.
Oh, the homeschool life.
What?
I didn't have an extra 4 hours to watch TV in my day. I had a commute.
Well, I had, like, I mean, I didn't watch it all the next day. I had, like, two tapes I rotated through, so I had to break it up. But I didn't watch, like, most TV that was on in the evening.
Sure.
I liked the stuff that was on at like 2 a.m.
but yes, Dre, Bridger, and Noyce have yet again have had this argument about the value of transparency versus the fear that incomplete information could lead to unforeseen and deleterious reactions. And as she leaves, now, Bridger is starting to wonder what her priorities really are.
So back down in the other conference room, they're all busy reading the new things. That I love that this dude got them branded.
Yeah.
I love the thing. They're in fancy-ass, like, hard-bound UEO folders.
These are the founding documents of a new chapter of global undersea government. They better look nice.
Yeah.
You gotta put this in a museum.
So President Lee, though, is more interested in Lucas. Chatting.
I don't like the way that sounds. They're buddies.
I mean it in the way that those documents are really fucking boring.
That's true.
So might as well talk to the teen.
That's true.
And he's like, I'm not going to sign these, so like...
And neither is Lucas, because he's not a world leader. Instead, he's busy making a homemade compass.
Yes.
He is magnetizing a paperclip.
Yeah.
To float in a glass of water.
Yes. It's because he needs to know which way is east, because that's where the Sequest is, and he's going to send them a signal by using his Walkman.
Yes.
Through the vidlink. To amplify the sound out to the Sequest, so hopefully they can pick up on it and where they are.
Meanwhile, on the Sequest, Whiskers have found an undersea tunnel. And this one isn't clearly labeled like in Sea West.
No.
This one actually looks like it took some work to find.
And so Bridger's like, hey, send Darwin out and tell him to listen to the mountain. And then he's like, hey, O'Neill. You gotta be really good and very quick at computer imaging. And O'Neill looks at him and is like, ah, I understand. And I No one understands until, like, his next scene happens what the fuck that means.
O'Neill, I need you to flip a few pages ahead in the script to know what the cool thing you're gonna do is, but if I say it now, it becomes less cool.
Yeah. So Darwin gets sent out in his little air backpack.
Darwin in a backpack! Darwin in a backpack!
Going on adventures!
Adventure dolphin!
Do 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 do! Do 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 do! we're not continuing? Okay. Fine. Stops there.
Adventure dolphin!
It's when Darwin, like, puts his, like, jet pack on and, like, flies.
They should have given him jets on his backpack.
Yeah.
Super Darwin. And then when he just sort of, like, bonks people with his bottle nose, it looks a lot better. Speaking of episodes with President Lee, actually. Yeah, that was that one, wasn't it?
Mr. Lamb goes to try to, like, video link down to them again, but, like, he's like, it's not working. Why isn't it working? He's like, oh, they're trying to communicate with people outside. And Richard's like, should we be worried? And he's like, nah, they're old.
Well, they are so old that they are all, like, in a huddle, looking with amazement as, as Lucas uses a cassette player.
And it's play, and it's like, let's rock, and they're like, oh my gosh, clap, 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 technology. Back in my day, we had CDs.
It's true.
The cool thing O'Neill gets to do.
The cool thing O'Neill does.
He's looking at the footage of them all entering the summit and grabbing their faces and putting them on, you know, computer imaging of bodies walking through the sequest.
He is making deepfakes of all the hostages.
Yes.
So again, what is Bridger doing? Bridger is arguing to maintain secrecy and not share the nature of the emergency with the people.
Or that everyone's missing.
And also, he is creating false information to further muddy the waters.
Yes. And so O'Neill is working like crazy to get this done as Ford's like, okay, I'm gonna release the satellite. And we get a really cool CGI of, like, the satellite, like, being released from the side of the ship and going up.
This is the comm buoy that, like, unlatches from the hull of Sequest and goes up to the surface connected by this umbilical line.
The thing that got, like, hit by lightning.
Exactly. It would have been so nice for this episode to be much earlier in the season.
So you know what it is?
So we know what it is. We see it working properly and heroically before it gets wrecked in bad water. Because, like, if this were an early episode, it would have been in the time where so many episodes were like, here's another cool thing the Sequest can do. Here's another cool thing you haven't seen yet. It would have fit in that zone.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. Didn't. 19th.
Yeah. Back in the resort, Dre comes in again.
Yes.
Coming. And she's like, okay, we gotta, you know, do this. We are now under martial law. I gotta, like, go tell people stuff. And Bridger's like, no, like, we can buy time. And tells Ford to, like, hit it. And he's like, we see the video of Lucas and the leadership walking through the Sequest.
Lucas is giving the tour yet again.
Yes. They should have made it more realistic by giving everyone jumpsuits.
The Sequest gets more tours than the USS Arizona. And so...
Bridger does that specifically to piss off Hitchcock.
Yeah.
From their first meeting. Like, oh, you want me to tour the Arizona? I'll make this the Arizona.
Initially, Secretary General Dre is very upset at the idea of entering into a conspiracy to lie to the world, that would be a bad thing for someone who is, at least nominally, a democratically appointed official to do. And he's shocked that she would have a negative reaction to this idea.
Well, she seems suspicious.
The only suspicious thing is that after a moment's thought, she says, oh yeah, actually, good idea. We're definitely going to go with that, I guess. Yeah, this seems good. In a way where you can tell her heart's really not in it. And that's suspicious, because actually, like 10 seconds earlier, you were making a lot of sense to me, lady.
And then she leaves again. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Bridger is like, Billy, I think we have a traitor.
Because she's so worried about the possible fallout from, again, entering into a conspiracy to hide the kidnapping, death, who knows what, of world leaders from their constituent nations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Bridger, Noyce, and Hitchcock have a little brainstorm session about, why is this happening? Why would she want to do it? Who else could be in on it?
And he intuits the entire plot that she is in cahoots with Lamb to rewrite the UEO charter to deregulate industry in the ocean. And Noyce says, yeah, I have known her for a long time. She's a political dinosaur, quote, a leftover from when the world was run by lobbyists. The UEO is a post-lobbyist government.
Apparently. Yeah.
And the bright future is held not in the hands of the elected and appointed officials, but the military, actually. Those are the real shining future. It's so politically confused. I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah.
Politicians bad. Military good.
I mean, bad, yes. Also bad, though.
Okay, but in practical terms, in, like, the real fucking world, where does all that lobbying go? Where does the graft wind up?
I don't know. Who
gets the swollen budgets? It's the fucking military!
So anyways, Noyce is like, hey, if we can prove this, they'll impeach her. So we need to prove this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's easy to do. So Dre goes to Lamb and is like, we need to kill all of them.
Yeah.
We need to kill all of them and have their bodies wash up on an island. And Lamb's like, we're prepared for that. Hits a button. Water starts rushing in from the ceiling into the conference room that they are sealed in. And Lucas just walks right under one and looks up at it like, oh man, should have done that viral sweep.
And President Lee walks up behind him, looks at it, and is more like, oh man, we're all gonna fucking die.
Lucas almost dies every week.
I know,
so
he's used to it.
He's unfazed.
President Lee has never almost died, at least not that we've seen on screen.
We have a little check-in with Ford, where it's like, we've been doing our scans, haven't found anything yet, except there are mines all around the resort.
That's suspicious. Why are there so many explosives around this luxury resort?
And Bridger's like, huh, well, on a side note, send me an entire security team, please. We cut back to the room that is filling up with water so much it's now up to the top of the table. And then we cut to Darwin, who has now come back to the moon pool. And he's like, Lucas music!
Because Darwin was rocking out, yeah!
And
if Ortiz weren't on vacation, they would have heard this by now.
Yes. They would all know this. Because Ortiz is like, let me hit a button. Helicopters.
Even the elusive ones cannot hide from Censor Chief
Ortiz.
He
has a button for rock and roll music.
So does Lucas. It's the button marked play.
Yeah!
So on their check-in, upon hearing that Darwin's report is simply the phrase Lucas music, Captain Bridger tells them to turn on the sonar. What?
Turn on its sound scan.
That's what sonar is. The S stands for sound.
Uh-huh. Well, then they're like, what are we listening for?
Sound!
Music, specifically.
So they hit the button that, again, Ortiz would have hit 3 hours ago.
It says rock and roll.
And O'Neill's like, I'm picking something up. it's Hendrix's opening riff to which song was it?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. But the point is, O'Neill knows Hendrix as sampled and remixed by Lucas's AI composer program because everyone on this ship loves Woodstock.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if you're 18 years old during the Woodstock Music Festival in New York,
mm-hmm.
you are around 33 years old at the time of this episode's airing. You are square in the advertising demographic for Sequest DSV, and Sequest DSV turns to you and says, hey man, in 25 years, you're going to be really cool still. And the people who are going to be 33 then, they're going to really care about Woodstock and think you're cool. Don't worry, man. It's great.
Isn't this, like, around the time, though, of, like, the Woodstock? Or no, it was later 90s, wasn't it? It was
Woodstock 99? Is that what you're thinking of? Yeah, yeah, the 30th anniversary.
Yeah, it was later. So, never mind. I was gonna be
catching up.
We're getting close. They were definitely, like, thinking about it. They were in the planning stages. Like, in a few years, you know what we're going to do.
They should have planned more, considering how that one turned out.
Well, yeah. As Dre is leaving Lam's office, she's mm-hmm. like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to announce that there's an emergency press conference. And we're going to announce that when coming back from the Sequest, everyone died.
They hit a mine. Apparently the sea is lousy with them out here. What I wonder what's up with that.
So O'Neill, though, having found all this, calls Bridger and is like, hey, they're underneath you. There's a ventilation system you can use probably to get down there. And he's
classic option.
And Ford's like, you know, here's what you got to do. You need some climbing gear. And then Crocker comes in and is like, hey, Cap, what do you need? He's like, I need climbing gear. And Crocker's like, got it.
But we didn't have time to have the extended version where Lucas first, like, establishes himself in the room of world leaders.
Also, where are we getting climbing gear? I know it's only a 5-minute launch drive between the Sequest and the things. Do they have climbing? I guess they have climbing gear on the ship.
Mm-mm.
Do they keep climbing gear in the launch?
Look, these people got hobbies. You know, one of them has to have climbing gear around for shore leave.
So then we get the weirdest, like, montage of cutting between stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because Lam goes out to start the press conference.
I love Dre's idea for press conference because, like, if your opponent's move is to fake that someone is alive, you can just say they're dead. Like, yep. You don't have to prove it because no one can prove they're not because you kidnapped them.
And you're killing them as you speak. But so while this press conference, again, the largest press conference in existence, we will find out,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bridger starts his adventure.
Yes.
He is going to go through the ventilation shafts.
In a manner akin to a pinball, he gets his ass kicked by this ventilation shaft.
Yes, because he gets to a point where it drops down, and he decides, okay, I'm going to slide head first down this ventilation tube that has sharp corners, twists and turns, and he just, like, rattles around, bouncing off the walls. How he is still alive at the end, I do not know.
Captain Bridger is severely concussed by the time he gets down.
He smashes through, like, a piece of ventilation wall at the end.
Yes.
Head first.
As he spills out into the scaffolding chamber.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, like, through this, we've cut back to the press conference, like, 5 times, including Crocker being like, oh my god, where's the captain? And then Noyce is like, oh no, maybe he didn't make it.
So it is lucky that Dre must be like, and then, boy, let me tell you guys, when I make an announcement at this press conference we're all at, thank you all for coming.
It was supposed to start 20 minutes ago.
I would like to thank each of you by name for coming to this press conference.
Actually, I'm going to Shake all of your hands.
I will eventually tell you what it's about, but it's a big one. You're going to be so glad you're here at the press conference I called to tell you my urgent information starting now. Do we have any birthdays in the press corps? It's really important to recognize people who are so dedicated that they come to work on their birthday. My villainous plan. Can we strike that last word from the record? My plan. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your discretion. My plan in calling you all here today that is so urgent. As Bridger is getting out his laser cutter.
Yeah, so Bridger has now, because he got to the construction room, so now he has to rappel down the shaft.
With his climbing gear.
With his climbing gear.
The New York Times reporter is coming on a helicopter to the middle of the ocean. That's why she's got to keep stalling.
Need a minute. I'm fine.
Okay.
Almost.
So we're about to start talking about the laser cutter.
Well, okay, again.
As a tempacutus. As a laser cutter.
Go wash throw my pound. Okay. So Bridger has to rappel down the shaft to get to the room during this press conference.
Yes.
And then when he gets down there, he like knocks on and is like, "Hey, Lucas, are you okay?" And as Lucas is like treading water to not die, he's like, "No, I'm not."
It's bad in here.
Bridger pulls out his laser gun.
Yes.
And to cut a big circle in the roof of this room.
I love the metallic purple highlights on the, like, barrel of this laser cutter gun. It's so cool.
And after he cuts the circle, he, like, bangs on it. So it falls down. And it is the biggest fucking chunk of concrete.
It is an 8-inch thick slab of concrete that's, like, 3 feet across. And when it splashes into the water,
it floats. It floats. I love it because you're like, oh my god, they're all gonna die. No, they're not.
It's fine. It's fine.
And I love that they don't, like, get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see it fucking floating.
Yes! Yeah.
I'm like, they're gonna use that to stand on to get out better.
Space age ultralight materials in the construction here.
It's bubbly concrete.
It's
got air pockets.
It's that
in
bubble
it.
Creed. Yeah. That's what we want. Really porous concrete in our ocean.
So he lowers a rope to start pulling everyone out. Meanwhile, up at the press conference that's still going on.
The P in press conference stands for, well, the press.
Did I ever tell you about when I went to Woodstock?
With my good friend, Billy Noyce. Come on up here, Billy.
So she finally gets to a point where she's like, okay, I'm calling for emergency measures. And like, martial law is gonna happen.
Yes, we finally get to the point of declaring martial law.
And Noyce goes up to her like, no.
No, it's not. No, that's not. That's actually not happening.
And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And Bridger and everyone else just suddenly appears.
If you declare martial law, yeah, I think the highest ranking military official can then say, actually, no, we're not going to do that. It's regular law. Regular law, please. And so, yeah, during this, Lam is getting arrested by, you know, some of Crocker's dudes. And I love that, like, one of them on his left, the viewer's left, is just giving this, aw, buddy, face. Like, oh, you just stepped in it, Mr. Lam, while he's arresting him.
Yeah, so Bridger and Lucas and all the wet dignitaries
with their rescue blankets draped around their shoulders
have somehow climbed out of the room, rappelled upward with only one piece of climbing gear all along. I guess climb through a ventilation shaft again? No, they probably, there was a door they could get out of once they climbed up the shaft.
Suit guy probably has an elevator.
Richard.
They must have used Richard's elevator.
But they still had to rappel everyone up one at a time. Or yep. Not rappel, climb everyone up one at a time to get to the construction
level.
Well,
they stand on the bubblecrete.
They still have to get out of the room and then up the shaft. I don't count that there was a door down at the bottom of the shaft. And then they had to walk outside.
All the way out that courtyard. Yeah. Unfortunately, they don't have jumpsuits. It's just rescue blankets. I'm a little sad about that.
So Dre is under arrest. Crocker leads her away. And they have saved the day.
Yay.
Back on the Sequest, Bridger and Noyce are in his room. And Noyce is on a call with the general. And he's like, but I don't want to be head of the UEO.
Which is, for some reason, a position appointed by the U.S. military. What?
No, well, the interim, because he does say that you will be it until we can have an election.
And I guess he's been on the horn with representatives from the other, like, major confederations and nations.
Sure.
I guess, like, 8 confederation leaders just saw him arrest the lady that tried to kill them.
Yeah.
Was part of the conspiracy trying to kill. That's got to really count in his favor.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe they asked Lucas, like, who do you think should, like, be in head of the UEO? And he's like, you know what?
Krieg.
I was going to say, Noyce has really pissed me off.
Noyce would hate this job. Give it to him.
Give it to him.
Yeah.
He annoyed my fake papa.
Yeah.
He gets off the call and he's very, I don't want to be this. Duh. And
he doesn't want to be because it's a civilian job. He has to like resign as a head of the UEO military to become head of the UEO period.
Yeah. And Bridger's like, oh, well, at least I don't have to salute you anymore. And he's like, you haven't saluted me in 20 years. Like,
yeah, you island hobo.
And he's like, ah, come on. Let's go listen to Lucas's music. Give the kid some attention. Mm-hmm. He almost died.
Again.
And that's the end of the episode.
That's the end of the episode, except for the Bob Fact.
Bob Fact.
Bob Ballard of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute tells us that back in the old days, nations would claim the seafloor up to 3 miles from their shore. This is the traditional distance determined by how far a cannonball could be fired. However, recent treaties these days, nations are claiming 200 miles of seafloor for, quote, the riches of the sea as we enter, quote, the Sequest century.
Little stretch there, Bob.
That is, wow. That's a called shot. The Sequest century.
I mean, it's the century it takes place in, I guess. But that's about it.
Yes, Bob's fact is not about science, but about, like, ocean treaties, which, you know, is, I guess, fitting for for what is at stake.
I mean, I was kind of like, what the fuck is Bob fact going to be for this episode?
What's your Bob fact going to be for this episode?
Well, Darwin with his little breathing backpack made me wonder, I wonder how long dolphins can hold their breath.
Sure. So, unassisted, natural-wise.
Yes, okay. Natural, you know. We don't got little dolphin breathy backpacks right now.
Not on hand.
Yeah.
I'm looking around the room.
I mean, I don't got a dolphin just hanging
here. Oh, that's the problem.
It is the problem. Childhood me is not living my dream. Depending on what, like, type of dolphin you are.
Okay, sure,
There's different amounts of, like, breathing. Different lengths you can hold your breath.
Sure,
let's go with that.
Sure.
Most dolphins typically are like they're not as much like whales that are like diving for like a really really long amount of time and staying underwater. They tend to surface a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's typical they're only going a couple minutes. But when you look at their like breath holding capacities to the extremes, Atlantic spotted dolphins have been recorded to hold their breath up to 10 minutes. Coastal bottlenose dolphins typically are between 10 to 15 minutes. The maximum breath hold that has been observed was in 2016, actually, for one of them, which was 14 minutes. And then Riso's dolphins, which is a deep water species of dolphins, can go 30 minutes, actually.
I believe the Pacific white-sided dolphin can hold its breath just long enough to make me feel bad.
Yeah.
That's the dolphins at the shed, and I always think they're judging me.
Yeah.
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 Looking at you. Why do you think they're judging you?
Because the belugas are my friends, and they're jealous of me.
Yeah. Why aren't you friends with both of them?
Because the dolphins are jerks! They don't get along!
I think you need to get over yourself and accept both into your life. So what's your Bob fact?
Undersea hotels technically exist.
Really?
Not, you know, your whole dome with walkable air. You can leave the hotel and still be undersea, like we see here. But they generally take the form of a multi-story suite. And the lower level will have these big underwater windows or even a glass bubble that goes out. So the water is above you, a sea view all around. Some are sort of like man-made islands or just like parked submersibles, I guess, that you like take a boat out to your hotel room or you swim out with a snorkel offshore. And some cheat by trying to do the same effect offshore. You know, in inland cities, by just having a massive aquarium inside the hotel. And the fanciest suites have the same sort of setup in them.
Yeah.
If you want to check out an undersea hotel for yourself, your biggest variety is going to be in either Singapore or the Maldives.
This makes sense.
One available in the Maldives for $10,000 a night.
Dang.
Looks really cool, and that suite sleeps 9, plus the butler's quarters.
Oh!
So that's the sort of vacationer they're aiming for. There's a picture of that one.
Oh, that one looks really fucking cool.
Right?
That's very cool. That's much cooler than I thought it was going to look like.
That's the Conrad Maldives Rangali Island.
Very cool.
Some of these facilities don't do rooms so much as underwater dining rooms.
Ooh.
For the hotel, a restaurant.
Mm.
This one's in...
Also the Maldives?
Yes. Hurawali, Maldives. There you go. So yeah, I'm sure just the existence of like, well, what if we build an oceanside hotel room really low and put a big window on it is something Bob would say, oh yeah, we're definitely living underwater. Forever. It's just around the corner, man.
Yep, right there. Right there.
Looking behind Bob Fax has made me lose respect for Bob Ballard.
I feel like I can't blame the guy. Like, I feel like they were like, this is, write us a fact about this. And like, what the fuck was he supposed to talk about in this episode?
There's not much to talk about this episode, but I am going back
to last week
and that time where he's like, you know what's great? Pumping natural gas offshore. That's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Just all the crude oil we can get offshore. Yum, yum, yum. That's the best way to use our ocean, says Bob Ballard.
Bob, you need to do better.
Do better, Bob.
Do better.
Do bobber.
Bobber.
Do bobber, bed.
Now, having talked about this episode,
yes,
what are your feelings on it? Do you still not enjoy it that much? Is it still mediocre
this,
for you?
This is still a very, like, mid-tier Sequest for me. Because, like, I don't think the problem-solving is nearly as interesting as a Bad Water or a Better Than Martians.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like this better if it were much earlier in the season. Not just for those things that are out of place, but I think... Like, if it were the first time that Bridger was really pushed because his special boy was in danger,
yeah,
that would hit a lot harder.
When we're done with this, do you want to, like, go back and watch them in the order they
were supposed
to happen?
Watch them in production code order?
Yeah.
That would be interesting. That would be something. Like, yeah, this is from the Tommy Thompson days, and here it is. Like, in the home stretch of the season.
Yeah, we're on the last DVD. Excuse me, Blu-ray.
I've also made some points as we've gone along this evening about some things that I find just really ridiculous and detrimental to the episode as a whole. Do you still like it, or have I ruined this in some part for you?
Oh, no, I still love this
okay.
episode.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that.
I think this one, for all its ridiculousness, is so... It's fun. It's like, I think I actually find it more charming now, because I'm like, oh my god, Andrea, stop, like, leaving the room and coming back.
The vent rescue timeline is, wow, man.
Where did you get climbing material? And I, like, like, that stuff that in some things would make you dislike it, but it makes me kind of love it more. It was just like, what is time? Time's an illusion. We can rescue people in this time frame. It's fine.
It's also so strange, though, that, like, the interests of the people and the world and the environment are entirely in the hand of the military, when every other episode with a military concern is Bridger is the like peacenik weirdo who has to hold the military at bay.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, if this happened earlier, would it seem as out of place?
Right, right.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess we've kind of come to the end. So, reminder time.
Reminder time.
You should leave us a rating and review whatever you're listening to us. A nice little 5-star. Because if you do, we'll, like, read it out. And, like, no one has for a while. So, like, we can't read it out. And that makes us sad.
Yeah, yeah. It was a nice little rhythm we got to. It's part of the show.
It's the charm. It's the charm.
It's missing.
Get your shout out.
Yeah.
But do that. Subscribe. Leave a note.
And share. Tell people about Whiskers. Tell people about Sequest, but also tell them about Whiskers again after that.
Mm-hmm. You could also follow us on Blue Sky at Whiskers. Lots of fun going on over there.
Hell yeah, brother.
If you need your Sequest fix between these episodes, it's the place to be. Exciting news dropped.
Yes.
Yes. The C2E2 news.
That's right.
I feel like we should share this for our listeners, especially anyone that's local.
Anyone in the Chicago area or who wants to be in the Chicago area this coming April, right?
Uh-huh.
This year's show is in April. The Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, C2E2, is filling out their guest lineup and has not one but two Sequest cast members on the guest list, appearing primarily for other projects.
But they're both going to be there. And you better believe we are going for the Sequest.
So first, and weeks ago, they announced Michael Ironside, whose Sequest character we have not met yet and will not for a while.
Yes.
But today, at time of recording, they announced Timothy Odmanson.
Dr. Levin!
Dr. Levin from 4 very special episodes.
I'm so pumped. I'm so excited.
Gotta ask him about them ocean ghosts.
Yes.
Along with 3 other cast members of Psych.
This is our time to ask the question of, like, hey, were they going in the direction of trying to make your character a bigger character and then, like, change their mind? Like, were you supposed to be in more episodes originally? Tell me.
Also, not the main 2 characters from Psych.
Yeah.
The guys on the poster, they're not coming. At least not yet. I don't know.
Eh, who knows?
They announced Sean Astin and John Rhys Davies like months ago.
And then.
But then Elijah Wood like a week ago.
Fuck
so
yeah.
Things can happen.
Things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you are in the area or want to be, maybe check that out for your Sequest love and heart.
Just wait until they announce Krieg.
I will die.
Along with the rest of the cast of Cory in the House, I guess.
I would maybe pay for a picture if it's Krieg.
If it's Krieg. Krieg gang!
I would bring a burger.
Krieg gang! If we just start singing Cheeseburger in Paradise at him.
Just Krieg gang! Krieg,
Krieg
gang!
Krieg gang! Krieg gang. Anyhow, with that,
I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.
Kree gang!
Kree gang!